The recordings have started, so you can go ahead.
Thanks, Grace. We have an echo, so I'm not sure what the cause of that is. Maybe someone's got a mic permanently open.
I muted Josh's mic, and that should help, that his mic was open.
All right, great. Thanks, Grace. Just to give you a brief update, we had a call of the full group this morning, a two-hour meeting of the full group, went through various things. It had a pretty productive tone to it, and a key point we discussed with them was, or at least I put a poll to the group seeking interest in your attendance in Istanbul, and there was an overwhelming support for having at least one of you in Istanbul. We assumed that would be Holly, but that's to be discussed. But, you know, obviously we've had separate email. We had a separate discussion when we first kicked this off about the possibility of it being, depending on what was going to be covered, it being more than just Holly. So there were really two themes within the group. One was, I think there was a sense, and that was my sense, in any event that we would like one or more of you present, and really would like to hand it over to you to suggest who you think, from a kind of skill set point of view, if you've had the opportunity to discuss that, you would propose to send along. And I guess, subject to sign off on the financial side, this is a bit new to us. We haven't really, but I'll hand that over to Grace to get the final sign off on financial commitment to do that, but then we would respond to your suggestion. So let me put the ball back in your court, Holly, just to check who you would ideally like to send along, both from the point of view of generally engaging with the group and providing the kind of specific input we would seek.
Certainly. So I can certainly make it. I'll be in London. I can easily come on over. We were thinking in terms of sort of priorities, that it would be really helpful to have one of our California corporate lawyers come so Sharon Flanagan has said that she would be able to come for this trip. If I could add a third, it would be someone with sort of that broader internet governance knowledge, either Ed or a very senior associate who works with Ed Vivek. But that's what we were thinking. That's along the lines that we were thinking.
Thanks, Holly. Greg, do you have any thoughts on that? I thought you might. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Jonathan. Greg Shatton, for the record. I think that that sounds like the right approach. I think we, you know, definitely the overarching corporate governance concerns, as well as your role as the hub, make you, Holly, the ideal primary. And I think that the concerns about California law and practice and California nonprofit law and, you know, options available under that are, you know, also bubbling up, and clearly as we discuss systems and models and proposals, you know, that those are, I think, key. Not sure I would extend it to the third person. In an ideal world, we would have a lot of people there, but that's maybe overkill. You know, we'd certainly want someone like, you know, Vivek or Ed, if not coming to, you know, do some, you know, remote participation, and in general would hope that people could be available as it looks like their specialty areas might come up. For instance, there's going to be, at some point, we're going to bring up trust. There's no reason to send a trust person to Istanbul, but at the same time, if we can map things out so that we know when the trust aspect is coming up, we'd want to have the trust person available and also not have them come in completely cold. So we'd have to figure out how to do that. So, you know, part of it is how many people, you know, will really look and feel productive, and how many people will ICANN feel like paying for before they start feeling like it's too many. So I guess you know, I'm definitely down for two and kind of undecided on the third. Thanks.
Just note for the record that Holly says she's lost audio at the moment. Martin, did you have anything you wanted to add at this stage?
Actually, no. I think I agree with both of you that at one is needed, and the group was quite clear in that. A second one would or could be helpful, depending on the questions. Also, I don't think the third one would be needed and might be overkill. Also, in the fact that I don't think we will debate very specific legal questions. They usually can't be answered on the fly, and I'm not sure if you want to have that. We need some directions, and that can be given by people with a broad, good knowledge, and I think if Holly and a Californian law specialist would be nice.
Thanks, Martin. Let's take that as then a decision and a recommendation. That Grace, do you feel comfortable being the messenger to take that back?
Sure, Jonathan, and Sam is also on the call.
Oh, I hadn't realized that Sam was on the call, so that's I'm sorry, that's my error. All right, Sam, great. So Sam's obviously picked that up. So it feels to me like our request and recommendation on the back of the meeting today and the discussion we've just had is that both Holly and Sharon participate in person in Istanbul and coordinate with resources at their end for remote participation should they be required, and it is then incumbent on this group generally to specify as best as possible what in advance what the, you know, which topics we're going to cover in which area, and we'll work on that over the next week to 10 days prior to Istanbul.
Thank you, Jonathan. That's very helpful. This is Holly. I'm back on. One of the things that we are working on currently is sort of a FAQ type response to the questions that have been posed, and our hope is to be able to provide that to you shortly before Istanbul.
Okay, great, Holly. Well, it's sort of the sooner the better, but obviously you need the time to do things properly and thoroughly, and we have yet to shape up fully what the agenda looks like in Istanbul. We know we've got 8 sessions. We know we'll take up to 4 of those sessions, and others up to 1 day in total. May not be the same day, but up to 4 of those sessions to deal with the issues in and around your work, and it will be a minimum of 2 sessions, and that will be influenced in part by our discussions with you and how much substance we feel we can cover.
Okay. In terms of our approach to the questions that have been put on the table so far, I just want to manage expectations. Again, we're going to take them at a fairly high level. We think that some of the questions indicate a need for some real grounding and education on some of the broader topics. And so we're going to try to take a high-level approach to them. Otherwise, we would be writing a treatise. Some of the questions have multiple parts and ask for perspectives from multiple jurisdictions, and we're going to defer some of the jurisdictional kinds of choices to a later date because we think first it's important to get a grounding in sort of what an approach would be under a California or U.S. general state corporate law approach. We wanted
to put that
out there and make sure that that was okay with you.
Yeah. Greg, your hand is up. Did you want to respond or comment?
Yeah, a couple of things. I think that sounds like a good overall approach. And obviously anything that I or we can do while you're in the process of answering to help sort things out, you know, available anytime. At least I am. Secondly, with regard to, I think it's a good idea to keep the jurisdiction question, which has been generally a rat hole for years, if not since the dawn of ICANN, you know, the multiple jurisdiction question. I think it is important to be able to speak to some of the, you know, individual issues or unique issues under California not-for-profit law, and not just answer with regard to kind of the, you know, the you know, generic kind of, you know, U.S. corporate law kind of.
Absolutely, Greg. We intend to be able to speak from a California perspective as well as a sort of a general state law perspective.
Yeah, so I think that's just, you know, an observation. A lot of people have hammered very much, you know, on the California issue, and there are a few amateur experts. I use the word amateur more than expert on issues of California public benefit corporations and the like. So I think the observation that an education and grounding is needed, my original response was going to be a little bit more earthy in the chat, but I decided not to go there. So I think overall that sounds right. I don't know if we need to in any way memorialize that. I think one of our rules of engagement was to try to memorialize even if it's in a couple of sentences. So maybe wouldn't be a bad idea if you just sent kind of a confirmatory email to the list of what you're doing, so we kind of have that record for transparency's sake. And sometimes transparency requires a little bit of awkward record keeping, you know, or if we could just note it in the notes here. But I think it's probably best to put it on the client list, just so we have that there for kind of for the good of the order. Thanks.
Good point, Greg. I would call that the sort of provisional scope of work between now and Istanbul, and that seems like it would cover it. I'm mindful it's 15 minutes past the hour. We've got 15 minutes of Holly on the call. I'm not sure how much beyond the half-hour point we'll go, so it's a question of what our priorities are to cover and whether there are particular questions or issues in relation to the briefing or issues document, or whether there are any specific questions or issues to be raised by our colleagues from Sidley.
Jonathan, it's Greg. I just wanted to come back with one other point and kind of a heads up. In addition to the four models that you see here, you may have heard some mention of kind of a fifth model, and I wanted to bring that more to the fore here. Currently, that's being called the integrated hybrid model, for lack of a better term, kind of an attempt to synthesize some of the aspects of the other models and avoid the things that seem to have set, you know, certain groups' teeth on edge. There is such a plural of teeth. The subgroup that's been working on that is preparing kind of a latest and greatest iteration of that model to send to all of us very shortly, along with a few questions along the lines of those in the back of the scoping document. And obviously urge them to proceed, you know, with speed, but I just want to give you that heads up as well, that's really, you know, equally a part of the discussion as the four models are. Thanks.
Thank you.
Greg. And on that topic, I'm not brilliantly familiar with that model, although I did read it, and then we later discussed it on a call. But one of the things, at least one of the elements of that model or variants of that model, are the potential to integrate some form of overarching solution with participation by what has historically been independent participation in the INA function of the naming people, participation by the numbers and protocols groups. And that has not been in any sense agreed. That's just, nor is it presumed to be possible to occur. So I just think it's worth flagging that currently the work of this CWG is on a naming proposal. That integrated model goes a little bit further in some areas and seeks to integrate some of the governance aspects together with protocol and numbers groups. And that there is no kind of remit for that. It's a proposal, it's an idea, but it's not driven by any knowledge that that will even be acceptable to those groups. That's worth just putting that on the table. Let me pause and make sure that the people from Sidley have an opportunity to talk, even if there aren't hands up in the chat, in the Adobe Connect room. Okay, so it was mentioned, and maybe you've already covered what you needed to there, Greg, that in item two, I'm assuming that we've covered what we can at this stage on the deliverables and expectations for Istanbul as we continue to work on that, but flag me if there is something outstanding there. And then, Greg, you mentioned and sort of proposed item two, which is closing the diligence discussion. So I suggest we move on to that and see if there are any other outstanding items or areas that need to be given new or additional detail to. Josh, go ahead.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me, and is my mic working well enough now?
Yeah.
All good.
Excellent. I think I figured out how to work the volume a little better. Just one question about, and this we touched on this a little bit yesterday, but still thinking about it on this end. Assuming for the moment that we adopted some sort of an MRT, whether by committee or board or structure, but there was a multi-regional stakeholder group that had some responsibility for ensuring that the IANA functions was carried out in a manner that was sort of consistent with the mandate and the mission. Is that going to be the scope of the remit or the mandate for the MRT? Or so it, will it just be monitoring the performance of ICANN as the IANA functions operator at a high level, perhaps? Or will it also be reviewing the sort of policy and administrative decision on the policy side as well, or is the intention and the way the CWG has been thinking about this is to limit the MRT's remit to the implementation of the IANA functions as determined to be necessary by, you know, ICANN under its mandate?
Good question, Josh.
Perhaps let me give you an example.
I have some thoughts, but I'll defer to Greg, who's answering. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just give you one quick example. So because there was some discussion, you know, about that functional separation that needs to sort of be maintained within ICANN. Here's an example. If at the policymaking level certain recommendations were made to ICANN, the ICANN board decided to take an action that some viewed, or you know, a group viewed as contrary to those policies, and not necessarily take an action, but just in its interpretation and implementation of that, those policy recommendations, it instructed the functional group of ICANN, the group responsible for administering the IANA functions, to, you know, behave in a certain way and to act in a certain way with respect to the registries. And there were some, so in that instance, ICANN is fully functioning in accordance with the directions of the ICANN board, and there's no debate whether or not it is in compliance with the direction of the ICANN board. But the issue really is at the policy level for how the ICANN board interpreted the policy guidance that was given to it and decided, you know, what steps were necessary to implement that. Is the intention that the MRT would be available or would be a forum that people could revisit their policy concerns with how the INA functions are being administered, or is it, or should its, or is its role intended to be limited to providing some oversight into whether or not the INA functions are being administered in accordance with board direction, regardless whether some people agree or disagree with that board direction?
Josh, I want to make a point of clarification before myself and Greg give you a fuller answer on that. Could you mute your mic? Thank you. So there are many functions carried out under instruction of ICANN's board. All sorts of functions take place, many of which impact directly on, in particular, so-called contracted parties, the registries and registrars. There is a limited subset of functions under the broad ICANN umbrella that are carried out by the IANA function itself. So we shouldn't assume that all functional activity takes place only within IANA. So I just wanted to make that point. To the substance of your point, my view is there's a pretty bright line between these two, and that the area that you were talking about is beyond the remit of the MRT as conceived here, and that work would be done via ICANN's accountability track, and that's not per se within the scope of this group, and therefore the MRT. I'll curb my answer at that point and pass the baton over to Greg, who's been patiently waiting.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Let me jump in real quick, Greg.
Go ahead, John.
Sorry, because I lost Jonathan. I lost Jonathan right as he was about to speak, so I apologize, but if somebody could just briefly summarize what was stated. And then, Grace, could you mute me? Because when I try to do it, it disconnects me entirely.
Okay, Greg, forgive me, then I'll just come back again and do the quick repeat. So, Josh, I really made two points. One, that there are many functional activities carried out under the broad ICANN umbrella and therefore ultimately under the direction of the ICANN board. There are a limited set of functions under the broad ICANN umbrella that are carried out within the IANA function, and that limited set of functions is what we are concerned with here. So that's point one. And then point two, therefore, is that to the extent that there was an appeal about the substance of a board decision relating to policy matters or the like, that's, in my mind, well beyond the scope envisaged for the MRT, and the MRT would be very much constrained to the oversight of the IANA function and it performing consistent with its limited and very tightly scoped remit. Greg?
Thanks. Josh, do you have any other questions for Jonathan based on that? I see you're on mute, so I don't know if you're speaking.
You're unmuted, Josh. Sorry, there you go.
Unmuted, Josh.
Okay. Now, I understand, Jonathan, that that ICANN is obviously much broader, but I was referring to a specific issue. You know, were an issue to arise in connection with the INA functions. So, in other words, there was a policy recommendation made to the board regarding that the implementation of which would require some conduct or activity by the INA functions team. And the board interprets that policy recommendation in a particular manner, instructs the INA functions team to act in a particular manner, and someone takes issue with that interpretation by the board. Would there be, is the intention that the MRT could be a forum to appeal the board's interpretation, or is the function of the MRT, is the form of the MRT a narrow remit that is limited only to INA's conduct in, you know, its acts or omissions in implementing board direction?
I would say the latter.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful.
And Josh, I think, you know, kudos for hitting kind of a very tender area, which is the kind of looking at board action, which we've looked at the IAP rather than the MRT to some extent as being potentially an avenue for that, and as well it's been swung over largely to the accountability group as opposed to our group to deal with kind of board-level activity. So as to what the MRT is supposed to be doing, I think the general view is that it is, and just you can drown in acronyms and ICANN, it probably takes a couple of years to learn them all, and then we make up new ones just to befuddle people. So MRT stands for Multi-Stakeholder Review Team. And by and large, most groups in ICANN don't break up regionally, though a few do. So in any case, the MRT, I think, was seen, you know, primarily as a kind of second level of recourse above the CSC for dealing with performance issues, and also as perhaps a, and remember, it was originally named the Periodic Review Team, as a group that might look at the annual and longer-term types of reviews and site visits and things like that, though the divide between what the CSC takes care of and what the MRT takes care of, you know, is gray, and to some extent, you know, issues of whether there are things that should be done by a group that's all composed almost entirely of registries versus a more multi-stakeholder group drive those as well. And the MRT was also viewed as a group that, if there were a that would generally, if there were a contract, kind of enforce the terms of the contract, or you know, using whatever means are necessary, if it's a contract or if it's a standard, an internal standard. So I think those were kind of the and also would conduct any potential RFP or search for a different provider, or even an RFP just for the purpose of keeping ICANN on its toes, as some have proposed, which is another controversial subject. Some have advocated for mandatory periodic RFPs. Those may be people who've never gone through an RFP. In any case, I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I'm going to hand the baton straight over to Cam, who has a follow-up point or question. Cameron, we don't hear you. You may be on a mute on your phone or device. Cam, I'll leave you to toggle with that for a moment, and I'll come to
Hello?
Oh, there, we got you now, Cameron. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Thank you. So I think some of my question was just answered, but it's a little bit in the same vein as Josh's in terms of some of the stakeholder concerns more broadly. I'm certainly familiar with a number of the issues surrounding the top level domain policies and some of the broader policy issues. I guess my question is how much those concerns are specific or get into the IANA functions contract, and you know what some of those stakeholder issues are. And as Greg just alluded to, the question about putting out an RFP, others, but there are other things that we should be aware of there.
Let me try and come back on that, Cam, with a perhaps simplistic answer. But there is a requirement. I mean, a core mandate of ICANN is obviously to develop policy, in particular, significantly in and around generic top-level domains. And that may be the operation and running of how those domain names function, or indeed the creation and implementation of new top-level domains. When those recommendations in and around those are made, they're obviously made to the ICANN board, who then will make a decision whether or not to accept those recommendations, and all of that follows well-specified pathways and so on. The board at that point, let's say it was, for example, the creation of a new top-level domain, the delegation of a new top-level domain. One issue that then makes that decision and makes a and on the back of that decision, an instruction would be given to the IANA function to implement that. One issue that the group is still working on is the so-called authorization function, where at least hypothetically the NTIA in its role as oversight body could have rejected the placement of a new top-level domain name into the root. There is no precedent, to the best of my knowledge, for that happening, but we call that the authorization function. So that is one of the functions that is falling away and that our group needs to determine. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it felt to me like you were getting at or around that point. So as a matter of general principle, the policy is made within ICANN and plain and unambiguous instructions are given over to IANA. And to the extent that IANA performs well, there is no interpretation, and IANA implements those instructions expeditiously and effectively, and there's no cause for complaint. So I don't know if that answered specifically your question or gave a little bit more color or picture around what you were asking.
No, it's helpful. I mean, I think it certainly shed some light on what the, you know, where the top level domain issues spill over into the IANA functions contract and or the IANA functions more generally. I guess my question is also whether there are other sets of stakeholder concerns, with respect to the IANA functions. And I guess as a follow-up to what you said, this may be getting into the weeds a little bit much, but sorry, one of the reasons NTIA has never exercised the authorization authority is a reluctance to have government and the U.S. government override ICANN decision making in that way. It's conceivable, I guess, that a non-governmental multi-stakeholder group would be willing to do that. Is there a sense that may be something that you'd want to include in the MRT authorities? That's the end of my question.
Thanks. I would imagine explicitly not. I think one of the key questions we are dealing with here is really the assumption, I think, that things are working well presently, and the issue being what to do if they are no longer working well. So I guess one has to work with that working assumption. It's really about building in protections and capabilities should things no longer function as well as they do now. Greg?
Yes, I would say, first kind of echo that the idea is to, and I think I mentioned this before, the RFP basically says we should try to keep the status quo or explain why it should change. One aspect of the status quo, and then, talking with, Fiona Alexander, who's at the NTIA, and, and also to the, at least one of the people who actually exercises kind of the authorization validation function at ICANN, it's viewed as a very ministerial function. It's part-time work for one person with a backup. I think there is a concern that the authorization function, in the wrong hands, could somehow become more activist. Technically, it's supposed to check off whether policy has been followed, and at least in the delegation authorization, and there's usually a more or less standard paragraph that appears in those GTLD delegations that states that it has been followed, and usually that's kind of taken on as an honor code sort of validation and not revalidated. So there's certainly a question about whether there should be a validation or authorization function at all, and if so, who would carry it out. But I think I wouldn't say definitely, but I think fairly, I don't think there's much idea that it would go to the MRT to do something like that. I think, and another concern, of course, is speed. And service levels, are basically time and accuracy related. One of the concerns is that sometimes the IANA function process doesn't, could be faster, could be more automated. So I think the idea of giving a part-time body of somewhere between 11 and 27 people the authorization function would probably not go too far. Thanks.
Thanks. That's very helpful in their understanding sort of how we map the functions.
Any other questions or comments in and around building up a better picture of the diligence or the? I think one comment I wanted to make is that we've talked about, you ask questions reasonably of things like the MRT, the CSC, the composition, the scope, the remit. I think it's really important to note at this point that these are work in progress. So to the extent that we give you answers, we describe the work of the group to date. They're not unequivocal specifications. And of course, to some extent, and this is where there's a circularity to the whole thing, let's take the MRT, for example. Its role, remit, and scope is contingent on the corporate governance construct or model chosen. So we have chosen to continue working at this in any event in order to not be caught in a death spiral of waiting for the model to emerge. But nevertheless, the specification of, for example, the MRT is to some extent ultimately contingent on the corporate governance framework or the mechanics, the legal and other structural mechanics that it chooses. Go ahead.
It's Greg. I just wanted to make kind of another overarching observation about how we're looking at these models, and to some extent this is editorial commentary, should be taken as such. overarching, as you've seen, the four models have fallen into two categories, the so-called internal and the so-called external. And in viewing the group dynamics, my personal view is that there are a few diehard internalists who would not accept an external solution under any circumstances, and a few diehard externalists who would not accept an internal solution under any circumstances, but that most people are, somewhere more toward the middle of the spectrum. Not saying they're at the middle, but they're not at the very ends. And that many people who advocate for an external solution would be interested in or willing to accept an internal solution that they felt had as much teeth and accountability and the ability for the stakeholder groups to accomplish their goals or for their instructions to be carried out as would be on an external basis. To give an example of that, one of the reasons that the external contract co-solution seemed attractive is that everyone understands contracts and understands that contracts can be, that notices of breach can be given and that periods of cure and escalation can take place, and that if there isn't a satisfactory cure, that a contract can be terminated, and that the obviously a party at the other end, can have certain recourse if they feel it's been unfairly and inappropriately terminated. There are obviously plenty of litigations around termination issues, but basically it's an understood construct, and that whether there were similar constructs that could be equally viable under an internal model is kind of a key overarching question, and kind of the maybe it's the the question in a sense in trying to parse between different models. And I think some of that goes back to attitudes that rightly or wrongly are skeptical or distrustful or even at the extremes hostile to whether ICANN the corporation is responsive and acts kind of according to the will of the community in any way, shape, or form, or just kind of gets ahead of and away from the community and does its own thing. So that informs kind of both of the groups that are taking place, the accountability group and our group. So I think we have on the one hand, or at the one level, we have the actual kind of individual aspects of each of these potential tasks that need to be carried out by some sort of operation and according to some sort of rule or procedure or documentation, and then we have at the next level kind of the models, and at the highest level the issue of where are the teeth and can the teeth work, what do those teeth accomplish, but can those teeth accomplish what we set out to accomplish, or will there be some way for a result to be avoided, and is it easier to avoid a result in an internal governance situation as opposed to in issues of enforcement and termination of a contract. So that's kind of my I'll get off the soapbox now, but I just want to note that kind of highest level question. Thanks.
Any other questions, issues of clarification, points required to be dealt with for colleagues at Sidley? All right. Sounds like we might have answered what you need for now. I know we've lost a couple of people along the way. Thank you very much. Martin, Greg, you're set. Lisa, sorry, acknowledging your presence as well.
I think I'm set. I note that we did 4 and 5 of that list of things, but I don't think that's necessarily – I don't think we need to go there. I think we've kind of covered them in other ways. I'm talking about the list on page 3 of the scoping document, but know, we can always revisit that. So as long as Sidley feels like they're diligent enough for the moment, I think we can feel the same.
Okay, sounds like a natural conclusion point. We won't keep things running unnecessarily. Thanks, everyone. Please feel free to get in touch with us by mail. And, you know, obviously this will be, just to note that there are 20 people who've now joined our combined mailing list, and the audio and detail from this will be available to the full CWG. So to the extent that we receive feedback on, you know, our representations and work with you so far, we'll come back to you and we'll be available to talk with you on the email. Thanks very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.